You're listening to a CNA podcast.
Hi, everyone. This week's episode is about an idea in Thailand that's come up and then gone away for centuries. It's an idea that has been given new life by Prime Minister Setta Thawisin, who seems bent on making sure things are different this time. Now picture this, a bridge over land that cuts across the narrowest part of Thailand in the south. The idea is to construct 90 kilometers of highways, railways, and pipelines so goods can just cut across and completely avoid the congested Strait of Malacca. Mr. Setta says it could save 6 to 9 days of time at sea. Now that's Prime Minister Setta talking at a media briefing in January. He's wearing a bright mustard yellow shirt. He's speaking under a crisp blue sky surrounded by trees. He was visiting Ranong province in southern Thailand, and he brought his entire cabinet with him to sell his idea. I'm Teresa Tang, and CNA senior correspondent Jack Board joins me today to discuss why this land bridge has been so divisive. Hey, Jack. Hi.
Hi, Teresa. Good morning.
No secret that you're Australian, but you have called Bangkok home for some time now. Southern Thailand, is that a region you're familiar with, or was covering this story a first for you?
No, it is a region that I have been lucky enough to travel to quite a few times as part of covering Thailand over the past 5 years or so. Of course, not always just for work. It's a pretty nice place to go for a holiday as well. Lots of beautiful resorts down there. And the area that we're talking about isn't that far away from Phuket, as an example, a place that lots of people would go on holidays. So as you mentioned, yeah, a place that has been referred to as the Kra Isthmus, the narrowest part of the Malay Peninsula. It's a beautiful and diverse part of the country. You've got the secluded Andaman Islands. You've got mangrove forests. You've got the buzzing fishing village of Ranong. And then as you head up into the mountains, there's farmland nestled alongside national parkland. And then the land sort of flattens out as you get across to Champon, where you have these sleepy fishing villages and coconut groves sitting on the Thai Gulf. So a really interesting and beautiful part of Thailand. And what we're talking about here is a major infrastructure project that would change the way that people live in this area. Two deep sea ports. One would be built in Ranong, which is on the west side of the isthmus, and then a second deep sea port in Champon province in the east, and linked by these 90 kilometers of highway and railway and pipeline. And the idea is to create this new international trade route, which would avoid the congested Malacca Straits between Indonesia and Malaysia. And ideally, it shortens travel time for vessels. Thailand has been talking about doing this for hundreds of years, since the 17th century. Obviously, we weren't there to hear these discussions, but the king at the time, he spoke about building this direct trade route between Siam and Burma. Since then, the French, the British, the Japanese have all had kind of goes at building a canal. The last government wanted it too, and now it's the turn of this current government to try and build what they're now calling the Thailand Land Bridge.
Jack, you're on the climate beat for CNA, and this story very much fits into that file, but it's also a deeply human story. Some in the South say they feel like the government has forgotten about them.
You're right. There are climate aspects to the story, but it's also a really deeply human story about livelihoods, about communities, about culture. You have these elements of massive economics and geopolitics as well. Mm-hmm. The human aspect was really what kind of drew me to it at the beginning. And kind of where I started my storytelling was visiting this fishing hamlet, this tiny little community inside the mangrove forest right near the Ranong Biosphere Reserve. You kind of have these narrow inlets that flow into the sea, and these are really poor communities. They rely on fishing for their livelihoods. A lot of them have fewer rights than other Thais. They're considered displaced. They hold no official national identification cards. So really their claims on their land and their ability to have jobs is pretty tenuous. So you have these small little rivers that flow out to the bay. And that's precisely the bay where the government is planning to build its deep sea port. So these communities are really right there, right next to where all of this infrastructure is planning to be built. I sat down and spoke with them, and I sat down with one woman who, funnily enough, a few days later, was all over Thai social media. And Prime Minister Seta was visiting this very same village, and she was there pleading with him in a really powerful, visceral way, begging him to not build the land bridge. And I was like, hang on, is that the woman that we just interviewed?
I talked to you already. Yeah.
Yeah. People were messaging me saying, oh, you really need to find her and speak to her. I was like, oh, we already did that. So it was interesting to speak to her first and then really see this reaction she had talking to the Prime Minister. So here's a little of what she had to say.
Stop it, be dining.
If possible, don't do it because the villagers will suffer a lot. Government, please think about the people. I have to accept my fate. I don't know where I'll go, but deep down inside, I think I'll never leave. I want to die here, and before that, make a living at the same place where I've always been.
During the visit of Prime Minister Seta, this community did submit a petition to voice their opposition, but 17 households are unlikely to be the reason that the project doesn't go ahead.
You talk about Champon District. That's right where the land bridge is going to barrel through. I watched your report. It was just amazing. Did you use a drone to capture some of those pictures?
Yeah, that's my trusty drone.
They look stunning. It was so lush, so green, home to durian and mangosteen fields. And of course, it's not surprising that farmers are not happy. They're taking action, are they?
Yeah, that's right. You can kind of take this road up from Renong up to this rural district called Paton. It's a really winding and dramatic road, and there's an abundance of waterways and this rainforest. And you think, wow, this is where they're going to plan to build major infrastructure. Cutting through these mountains. It seems far-fetched, but no doubt it's possible, but would be quite an endeavor to design and pull off. They're planning to build some 21 kilometers of tunnel as well through this landscape. And then you have these really well-established farms and farming communities, and they've become the central resistance point, at least at a local scale. They're newly formed. They've been energized by this project rearing its head again. Of course, they've seen it before. Mm. They've heard about this for generations, that they're going to build a canal right through their land. And this is just the newest iteration that these people are having to contend with. But as you drive across the isthmus, there are literally signs along the road nearly the whole way, and most of them saying no land bridge. Mm. For these farmers, a lot of them are aging. Their children have moved away. They've lived and farmed these fruits or various things for decades. So the prospect of them selling their land or having it taken from them and moving is a really hard sell. Mm. And there's lots of land speculation that's happening as well at the moment. They tell me that there are political figures involved trying to cash in on what could be certainly much more valuable land pretty soon. Here's one of the farmers that I spoke to. I think it was a really interesting insight into the struggle of the local people.
People here have quite a stable income from doing agriculture. If the government's mega project takes place, people in the area will lose the places where they make a living and reside. They will lose the ecosystem they rely on. This project doesn't meet the needs of local people. It doesn't benefit them. It'll destroy them.
So whether these groups as well can change anything, I'm not sure. But they are certainly taking a more sophisticated approach. They're looking at land rights issues in different parts of the country, especially focusing on what's happening in the Eastern Economic Corridor, which many of our listeners may also be familiar with. This is a massive new industrialized zone that's across three provinces in between Bangkok and Pattaya. Definitely, they're considering their options, and they will be a thorn in the side of whoever wants this project to happen.
Off the top, Jack, I played a soundbite from Prime Minister Seta's Instagram account. I actually took some time to read through the comments, and there were a ton of heart emojis, people saying, yes, finally, it's about time. Another guy said he actually drove along with the Prime Minister's motorcade and thanked him for dreaming so big. So it does seem like on the flip side, many people are actually excited to see this bridge come to fruition.
Yeah, 100%. There's a lot of enthusiasm for the project right across the country. What was clear that regardless of people, whether they were for or against it, this province has really been left behind and people feel something has to happen in this part of Thailand. There's been a lack of investment for decades. They used to have industry in this part of the country. They used to have forestry. There was mining. And a lot of that has all just been phased out and nothing has really replaced it. And you can kind of feel the difference. Tourism has taken off in these other southern hotspots like Phuket and Krabi. But Ranong is left as one of the provinces in the country with the lowest incomes and the highest rates of poverty. Mm. So particularly the business community is really hungry to see investment flowing in on the back of the land bridge. And they feel like this is the vessel that can provide it for their community. And this would be a joint venture between the public and private sectors. So there is a lot of focus from local industry and businesses to get this to happen. If you're in Ranong, you can see how important the pier is and the fishing industry. This is one of Thailand's most important ports for fishing, but it's old. Mm. It feels like it's been left in the past, really. So there's lots of talk. New pier could be built. Cruise ships could come. There'll be new hotels. There'll be modern medical facilities. There could be new air routes, an upgraded airport. So you can kind of see, like, people believe that the tail of this project could have a lot of benefits to them and bring people to come and visit, bring some returns on investment, which has just been missing for so long. On the other side of things, you also have locals who really want it as well. I went out to an island called Koh Chang. It's a beautiful speedboat ride about 40 minutes from the mainland. Very, very basic tourism, but stunning, like the isolated beaches that you dream of, right? And incredible sunsets.
Are you doing any work? You're just seeing all these beautiful places.
Yeah, it really hurts to have to work there and not get to actually take a swim in the sea. But, you know, they don't even have electricity. The roads are really basic. A lot of European visitors are coming here every year, but they don't even have basic infrastructure. And people are relying on diesel generators. The villagers, I was told, are drowning in debt. They're growing rubber for most of the year when tourism is not there and prices have been so low. So I spoke to a hotel operator and she's like, we're willing to give up this sunset and this unbroken vista that we have and face the prospect of cargo ships kind of on that horizon if it means just some basic opportunity. And that really struck me as like, you can understand the struggle that exists and the notion for us to want to give away a beautiful, pristine landscape is hard to justify. But even the people who live around it every day are willing if it means their lives improve. So I spoke to the president of the Chamber of Commerce. Have a listen to his thoughts.
We think the land bridge project will create opportunities. First of all, gross provincial product will be higher because Ranang will be a port town. Port industries will follow, especially with food. We can produce halal food and export it to Middle Eastern countries to meet their demands. Secondly, wellness tourism could take place in the Andaman area and Ranong.
The justification for many mega projects, not just in Thailand, but around the world, is often the economic windfall that will materialize. And some economists say that this year, Thailand is facing stagnant GDP growth. They say, hey, you know, what better way to jumpstart things than with large-scale foreign investment? Jack, can you take us through the economic argument to this?
Yeah, for sure. The Thailand government is rolling out a raft of measures and have done since the new government took over to really stimulate the economy as best they can. Some of those policies have worked, some have not worked, some have been abandoned, some have been debated as they do in the Thai political scene. Certainly, the government wants this to be an economic driver for a part of the country, which, as I said, has kind of been left behind. They're really tapping on to how many jobs this will create. So they've said some 280,000 jobs. That's a little unclear how those jobs would be created, who they'd be for, but it's kind of a flag in the ground that gets people excited. Mm. And of course, that's all being assessed now. The first phase we're looking at to be finished by 2030. So still some years away final completion not until 2039.
Wow.
And the economic viability of the project really hasn't been proven yet. There are no major investors that have kind of put their hand up to say, yes, we will be involved. There's still a lot of questions that the government has to answer, and they need to find the money. Apparently, there is interest from various different countries, including America and Germany, and of course in China. But as I said, nothing concrete yet. And from the local perspective, they're very skeptical of job numbers. People who own land and have farmed on that land don't want to suddenly become employees in a factory on the land that they used to have.
You mentioned China, Jack, and economists are saying Beijing is going to be the biggest winner here. Because if you think about it, the majority of freight traffic from China heading to Europe has to travel through the Malacca Strait. How invested is China in this project?
You're right that China's really central to this story. How invested are they? Well, it's not quite clear. It does feel inevitable that China will have to be a significant partner or investor for it to go ahead. They haven't shown yet the willingness to fund it directly. But we would expect that Chinese companies would be likely the major contractors if the project does move ahead to actually construct it. So having said that, the Chinese investment that has previously flowed through to this part of the world through its Belt and Road Initiative for major infrastructure projects really has dried up in recent years. The Thai government will be hoping that that tap to Beijing hasn't switched off. It was symbolic that within 2 months of being confirmed as Prime Minister, Setha was in the Chinese capital. He did a third Belt and Road Forum. So no doubt he's really pushing his Chinese counterparts hard on this and hoping that Chinese businesses will also come along for the ride on the land bridge, so to speak.
One country that stands to lose is Malaysia. There's concern that Port Klang is going to suffer financially. Now, this port has been known as the gatekeeper of the Malacca Strait, and some say it could see a 20% drop in cargo. Is Malaysia making any noise?
Not making that much noise yet, but they are looking very carefully at what the implications would be. Losing 20% of cargo is, you know, that's a significant loss. Mm-hmm. So I think the government wants to understand what the impacts will be. But potentially, Port Klang is to say that there are positives too for ports in Penang, for instance. They could be a winner in this. And generally, if Malaysia pushes hard with developing its own industrial and logistics center in the northern part of Malaysia, you could see the possibility of connection, a sense that northern Malaysia could better connect with southern Thailand. It's already an important trade area, so I think Malaysia will be weighing that up, definitely presenting a new type of challenge, and it'll be interesting to see whether they oppose it or they lean into it directly.
So no ground has broken yet, and as you say, similar projects have been floated around for hundreds of years. So at this point, what's your sense about this project under Setha Thawisin? Reports say bidding for contracts could begin in about a year. Do you think you'll be heading back to paved roads and deep sea ports, Jack?
It's so hard to say. And I kind of flip whether I think it's going to happen or not. And you talk to people, they're also unsure just because they've seen it before. No doubt that the Prime Minister is really doing the hard sell on this. It's become his central focus, it seems. He's been to 14 different countries, I think, in the first 6 months being in office. He's been all around Asia. He's been in the Middle East, in America and Europe and Australia. And he's a businessman. That's his expertise. He really views this as a potential legacy piece. That's part of this soft power push that Thailand is really keen on at the moment. And no doubt he wants it. There is domestic political opposition. The Move Forward Party has expressed concerns. They want more information. But right now they have bigger issues facing dissolution in the Constitutional Court. With their eye off the ball, the Landbridge Roadshow is kind of just carrying on. Will I go back and see highways and pipelines? I don't know. It does feel more realistic than the Krak Canal in the past. But if it did just get passed on to the next generation, history would suggest that that's not really that far-fetched as a possibility?
Well, I think we did our best trying to get listeners to visualize what this project would look like and where the bridge would straddle. But it is very much a visual story, and our listeners can see all of this for themselves, right?
Yeah, please head out to YouTube, check out YouTube and CNA.Asia. My visual stories are there to watch, and you can read it as well in depth.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for speaking to us today, Jack.
Thanks, Teresa. Really enjoyed it.
And also a reminder that the TV episodes of CNA Correspondent air every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. The team behind this week's episode is Saye Win, Clara Ong, Crispina Robert, Craig Dale, and myself, Teresa Tang. Thanks very much for joining us.